This is the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. My guest today is best-selling author Kat Timpf, whose new book is I Used to Like You Until... How Binary Thinking Divides Us. In a totally insane political season, this just might be the most important book of the year. I talk with Kat, who co-hosts the super popular Gutfeld Late Night Show, about why she finds it easier to tell people she works in pornography than at Fox News, what it's like being libertarian at a conservative network, and how she gets people to engage one another rather than vilify one another. This podcast was taped in front of a live audience in New York City. Go to reason.com/events to get tickets to our next Reason Speakeasy. Here is the Reason interview with Kat Timpf. Thanks for talking.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are also pregnant. We're going to talk about that. Is this a divine intervention or?
No, I had sex.
Okay. But did you have sex or did you have IVF?
I got pregnant the sex way.
But after doing IVF?
No. Right? So you know what's so weird is I froze embryos.
Yeah, you have frozen
embryos. We have 9 frozen embryos. Okay. And I was told by a doctor that I probably would need drugs to bring me up to at least a 10% chance of getting pregnant. So I thought that was true.
Okay.
And I was just living my life. Yeah. And then I just like didn't feel good one day.
So you did the IVF and then you got pregnant anyway.
Yeah, I just froze the kids.
You know, it's good. Yeah, because if Trump wins, you'll never be able to access those kids or we will all be paying for them. It's kind of confusing.
I'm not sure. Like I've heard both. I've heard that I'll never see them again or you guys have to start paying for them.
Okay. Well, we'll figure it out. Let's start with the book. I used to like you until ... And then it's about how binary thinking divides us. Is there a specific anecdote when you realized, you know, did somebody say that to you in a particular way, or did you think about that of like, I just can't stand this person because they are not my tribe?
I think it just happens to me in my life constantly because I'm an independent. I'm not a member of either major party, but I also work on air at Fox News. So I will get shit from the viewers because I'm not conservative on certain issues, or if I criticize Trump, they call for me to be fired, so on and so forth. But then there's people on the other side who don't even want to talk to me at all because they're like, oh, you work at Fox News. So that tells me everything I need to
know
about
you. Right, and you talk about in the book how you would tell people at parties that I work in pornography.
Porn, yeah.
Yeah. Because that facilitated better conversations.
People would be like, that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know those people you're talking to at a party where it's like, ugh, you're stuck talking to them for a little bit, but you know you'll never see them again? When they're like, what do you do for work? I say porn. And they're like, oh, cool. And then we move on.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to seem judgmental. Or sometimes when people ask me what I do for work, I'll simply say, I've also said, no, thank you.
What is the worst response that you remember when you're, or you know, yeah, I'm a commentator on Fox News.
Literally, all of them are the worst.
Yeah,
they're all the worst because they start projecting every single opinion that they have about Fox News onto me.
Right,
and it's just so. I had a piece out about me and about the book in Variety, and I was so excited about it coming out. It was a great piece, and all the viewers or all the like the readers of Variety were very pissed that they had done a piece on me and all because I work there. And it just blows my mind, especially because sometimes the people that'll be saying it to me, I'm like, don't you work at a fucking bank? What makes you so? It's just so because Fox is a platform. It's an idea. It's not an idea. It's a platform on which to share ideas. Yeah. And you do realize that if I weren't on Fox, if there was nobody who wasn't MAGA on Fox, then your grandparents who leave it on all day would never hear from anybody who wasn't MAGA.
Right.
And do you really think that that's better? And also working there, I do have people I know in my real life who are my friends who are very MAGA.
Right.
And they're not monsters, you know? I mean, we disagree, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing we can agree on or we have no common ground anywhere.
Have you ever had the experience where you're at, you know, something like the Met Gala
I'm not invited to stuff like that.
But well, let's say a liberal event, okay? Yeah. And people come up and it's like, a thank you for working at Fox News. Like, have you seen the Benedict Arnolds of the progressive left at all?
I mean, some people sometimes will have questions and they'll make statements like that. It's more about I'll hear from people after I make a certain statement that I know is going to piss off viewers. And I get it because I do sometimes piss them off. And I could sell, I know, because most people, I don't know if you guys know this, most people that watch Fox News are MAGA. Like, a lot of them are big Trump's, like, their dude. And so I know that I could sell more books. I could sell out all my shows, sell tickets to my shows faster if I said the stuff that I knew and only the stuff that I knew people watching were going to like.
Right.
So I get there's that temptation for that. But I truly can't bring myself to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's something that it can be hard to see a lot of that shit. Yeah. It can be frustrating, but I don't know how you'd sleep at night any other way.
How do you keep yourself from doing it? I mean, okay, so you want to sleep. So you're like, okay, I'm going to be honest to myself. But isn't it hard, like when you're in an environment where all of the pressure is in one direction, like how do you make sure that you're staying with one foot in reality or something?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just think of it as when it's as much as it sucks to get shit from people, at least when I get shit from people, I know that it's because I at least stood up for something that I believed in. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine getting shit from people and I'm just been grifting the entire time.
Right.
I could not possibly imagine.
So you were not going to get any of that tenant media money, right? That the Russian government was funneling in.
No foreign government has ever offered me anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have that to look forward to, right? I guess. You start the book and you close it as well with a quote from John Updike, one of his rabbit novels, where you're talking about the main character, or it's a line about the main character that says, "Hate suits him better than forgiveness," which is kind of a theme of the book, right? That binary thinking both divides us, but it's also more comfortable from where can you talk about that?
Yeah, I talk about hate as a shelter, right? That's what he talks about. And hate really can be a shelter for a lot of people, because if there's just these two sides and the other side is bad, then you get to be good just because you're not on that side. You don't actually have to do anything.
It's like you were watching a presidential debate last night or something.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. It was actually kind of boring. I couldn't really, it was not, I mean, it was boring. It was.
What did you want to happen that didn't happen in the presidential debate?
For them to kiss or something? Honestly, it was their first time meeting. Wouldn't it be funny if they did?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You see, like, the gleam in their eyes.
Yeah, what if they were like, no, you be president.
Yeah.
But they were, it was, I feel like honestly, both sides set the bar so low for the other one.
Oh, yeah,
like liberals were like, what if Trump is just like, calls her a bitch?
you know? Yeah, yeah.
And then conservatives were like, well, she's not going to be able to form a sentence. She formed all of her sentences and didn't giggle at all.
Yeah.
So I think that they did a disservice to themselves by setting the bar so low for her in particular. Right. But it just was like kind of boring. I mean, I fell asleep several. I mean, I actually, I fell asleep before it and I woke up throughout. Because I'm pregnant.
You were
tired.
Like, I'm having a miscarriage.
Saying this. Well, because I was tired. Listen, I had to wake up so early. Book promotion's hard. It's even harder when you're pregnant. I got up so early. So I got up at 4 a.m. So by 7 p.m. yesterday, I was just crying for no reason.
Right, right. Like, then the debate started
Yeah, I needed to go to bed. Yeah. But I also, so there is research I write about in my book that, and this is so obvious, they shouldn't even had to research it, but moral outrage is more often rooted in self-interest than it is in altruism. So the study found that the less power that people have or feel that they have over a problem, the more motivated they are to direct their outrage about the problem at someone else, and then the better they feel when they do. The problem is that doesn't actually do anything to solve anything, and we've actually divided us even further.
So how does that play out with a particular issue then? Say, like, can you take a kind of right-wing tribalist? Mm-hmm. What do they not feel like they have control over that they project outward and then do the same for somebody on the left?
Well, I think one of the the most interesting issues that I write about, and this is for both sides, is the climate. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that's relatively new to be a divisive issue. And it shouldn't be, really. Like, don't we all want clean air and we also want economic prosperity? But it became...
That's dangerous thinking.
But it's crazy. We should be able to have both. And it wasn't until, I mean, probably, you know, the Kyoto Protocol that it became kind of split. That's relatively new. And it's crazy to think about it now, because now it's like you say one thing about how maybe
even
this,
you calling it climate change.
Oh yes, so that's
you're Klaus Schwab's minion or something.
Of course,
right?
But yeah. It's to me, it doesn't seem that controversial that what you put into anything, whether it's the environment or not, it's going to affect the thing. That's just kind of how actions work.
And you're talking about being pregnant, right?
Yeah, that's how. Yeah. That is how it happens.
Yeah.
But also that it should be some of the stuff asking how much does this cost,
right,
is
right.
Also that's some of the things that people are proposing. They'll actually the cost benefit just isn't there, but that doesn't mean that you don't think it's real. So I think that, that's something that definitely
and
people feel powerless over.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Because like individuals can't really do that much mm-hmm. to affect climate change. And even like if the U.S.,
right,
changed
exactly.
everything, then, you know, India and China, you know, if they keep doing whatever they're doing, it doesn't
exactly.
matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we definitely, I mean, by all kind of polling measures and stuff like that, we're more polarized than we used to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of these weird kind of side questions of like, you know, would you let your children marry somebody from another political party?
Yeah.
What's driving that? Is it that we feel less powerful over things that matter in our life increasingly? Or, you know, why are we more binary in our thinking now than, you know, we were 20 or 40 years ago?
Yeah, I think a lot of it does have to do with, you know, it's finding that it becomes such a part of your identity. But also, I think that we've gotten to a point now where if you don't pick a side, people, you know, you have to kind of. People, there's so much pressure that you have to, because it's like, if you're not on my side, then my side's the side that is going to save the country. And then you're on the side that's going to destroy the country. And also, I think people are afraid. I think it's a very effective tool, fear. Politicians are very good at using it. The media is very good at using it, where it's a lot more motivating to be on a side. If you're saying the other side, if that guy wins, then the whole world is going to crash and burn. So if that's what you believe, and people do believe this, people on both sides do believe this. If you believe that, then you would obviously want to stop at nothing for your side to win. If literal civilization is what's at stake here, that makes it a lot easier. And I also think we don't really see each other as human anymore. And in a lot of instances,
I don't see myself as human.
Well, it's tough. I don't recognize myself in the mirror anymore. I'm like, who's that fat girl in my house?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And it's only going to get fatter from here,
that's
from what
right,
I've Googled.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, and then you never lose the baby weight. I think every woman, I can speak for every woman in this room who's had a child, you never lose the
weight.
Oh,
I'll just, yeah, no, I'm going to stop eating.
What's the role of, what's the role of, we don't judge,
yeah.
You know, it's like, what's the role of the media in increasing polarization? And, you know, a lot of people talk about how a platform like Fox News, when it started, it was always polemical, but it was not as extreme as it was. And MSNBC went through a bunch of different iterations before it became this kind of super
right.
woke thing. I mean, is the polarization being driven by the media, or is the media reflecting our polarization?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a very difficult thing to answer, but I do think it's interesting when people attack specifically Fox News as if there aren't those things that exist on the other side, right? I think that part of it has gotten worse, again, because of social media, all the hate that you'll have to actually see. People didn't used to have to hear that. Like, people didn't used to have to get off TV and be like, hear from all these people about how you're a piece of shit. And like, it's never just like, I disagree.
That was,
like,
you know, in a simpler America, that was your family did that.
Yeah.
For you, right? You didn't need strangers. To,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. And it's always so personal. Like, you're disgusting. Like, I mean, I have people whose entire fucking profiles is just shitting on me over and over again. I do like the power that I have over their lives.
Yeah, I mean, you're very important to them, then, right? Yeah.
It's a lot of retired women in their 70s that are like
that right?
the ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just triggered by the fact that I'm still breathing.
Are your worst kind of enemies online or your detractors, do they tend to be, are they progressives or are they conservatives who feel somehow spurned by you?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. I get a lot of the women are like, you know, you're not conservative. And I'm like, when did I say that I was?
Right.
I've never said that I was. My skirts are too short or, you know, it's just, but you can never please some people. Like everyone used to say I was like disgusting and old and I understood nothing about the world because I was childless. And then I got pregnant and 2 days after I announced it, these same people were like, will you shut the fuck up about being pregnant? There's more to life than just being pregnant. And I'm like, you know, I'm almost starting to think that this isn't really about me.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that this might just be like whose grandma is this? Like, will somebody please take her out to lunch? You know? And so you can't worry about it. But I really do think that that's part of it. I think that people can, they can notice that they get these careers and they get these platforms. And they're like, well, I don't want to upset my platform because then it's going to affect my bottom line. And I think that applies more to just media, though. I think that applies to Hollywood. I think that applies to everybody, really, who has some sort of public role or even corporations. Like Uber needs to, every Pride Month, have the cars be little rainbow flags. Why? Like, do you know what I, like, why did you not love gay people year round or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, no, they get 1 month.
They get one month. I mean, it's just.
And blacks, of course, get the shortest month.
And if they didn't have the rainbow, would that really mean something about how they feel? I mean, I just feel like so much of this is driven by that. And, but I feel like most people understand that, but they don't think about it in their day-to-day interactions or consumption of media. And not to say that there aren't, I know people who I work with who just, they love Trump. They do. They just truly, they're not pretending to love Trump. They just like, that's my, they'll watch videos of them and they're smiling. They love that dude. And like, good for you. I wish that I could feel that way. My life would be easier. My life would be so much easier.
It's because you're libertarian, right?
Yeah.
You always have to be, but wait, you know, like you can't enjoy yourself fully.
Yeah. Well, people be like, Trump for free speech. I'm like, okay, but he just said that he wants to throw you in jail for a year for flag burning.
Right.
That's...
Yeah.
That's not pro-free speech that you can't purchase a flag and burn your own
flag.
Come
on, but we're in a war for civilization, so you should not dissent.
Exactly. That's such an important political protest. That's what the First Amendment is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about, truly, about being able to protest the government without government retaliation. It's not so much about memes. The memes, too, are you should be protected, but of course you can't be pro-free speech and for prosecuting that.
Before we continue with the recent interview, I want to tell you about today's sponsor, ZBiotics. This is a game-changing product that you can use before a night out. Do you think you need to make a choice between having a great night or a great next day? ZBiotics might make a huge difference for you. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme that breaks this byproduct down. All you have to do is remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night and then drink responsibly. Try it out and see a difference the next day. I don't drink, but I'll tell you what, a friend of mine who does recently cracked open ZBiotics when we were out. And I said, hey, does it work? She told me, yes, it really works. Go to ZBiotics.com/TRI to get 15% off your first order. Use that code ZBiotics.com/TRI at checkout. TRI stands for the recent interview. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money without asking any questions. Once again, head to ZBiotics.com/TRI, and you're going to get 15% off at checkout. Now, back to the Reason interview.
You talk in a couple of chapters about kind of online speech and things like that. And it's weird, isn't it, that both the right and the left, at, depending on the day of the week or what blood sugar level they're at, they will be like, let's, you know, we have to shut down social media. We have to regulate it or control it. Where is that coming from? Is it just situational ethics of like we need to shut something down because it's harming us? Or
yeah, it's using fear to manipulate. And for example, I mean, I'm my first book that I wrote was a very passionate defense of free speech. Mm-hmm. I have maintained that point of view. I am a First Amendment absolutist, and both sides at times believe that they're First Amendment absolutists, depending on what's in the news. And after for so long, I think it was conservatives really were kind of had the leg up on liberals when it came to free speech. And then it kind of sort of that was going away in some instances, whether it is some of Ron DeSantis's legislation, which I write about, where I'm like, guys, the Stop Woke Act, if you think whether you regardless of whatever you think of woke thought and speech, whatever that means to you, you can't deny that that is thought and speech. And this is the government trying to ban instruction, whatever that means, of certain thought. You shouldn't stand for that, right? Because they could do the same thing within conservative thought and speech. And then I get in return, after I present this well-reasoned argument that makes sense, and it's the exact argument that I used when it was speech that they wanted out there, then I get called a pedophile.
Right. Yeah.
It's not like, I disagree. Usual, it's like, why do you want to talk about sex stuff with kids, you pedophile?
Yeah, no,
the
answer is somewhere in between. You're a little bit of a pedophile and a little bit of a free speech.
Just with the ease, I mean, for all this time, and conservatives were right to be, just because I'm not a Nazi because I think this. And then it's like it flips. Okay, you're not a pedophile if you want free speech in this instance either. And it's easier to think that you're like a warrior for children than just like somebody with a different opinion. But really, you're just somebody with a different opinion.
One of your chapters, which is very good, is titled in quotes, Think of the Children. Because then this, you know, this was so over the top in the 90s. I know when I started writing at Reason, the Simpsons had a character who would just show up and apropos of nothing would say, think of the children.
Yeah.
Because that was the way that conservatives and liberals just shut down any conversation. Do you think having a child, will that make you be like, no, don't think of the children. Or think of the children even less than you do now?
Yeah, no, I do want my child to be raised by a drag queen.
Yeah, okay.
At least partially.
Yeah, she has a chapter called Drag Queen Saved My Life, which we'll get to in a second.
No, I get asked that a lot. I get also emailed that by conservatives. In all seriousness, I get emails from conservatives like, well, maybe now you'll come over to the correct side now that you're having a child. And I'm like, what does that mean exactly to you? You know, like, I also am going on tour all the way through the middle of December. So I'm giving myself exactly a month and a half to figure out how to be a mom. And I feel like that is going to be plenty of time. I'm focusing first. I'm going to learn how to hold the baby.
Mm-hmm.
If someone handed me a baby right now, I'd be like, I'm not the right person for that.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever held a baby, an infant?
I held a baby.
A baby human, not a kitten or a chimp or anything.
The last baby I held was Meghan McCain's first baby in 2020.
Okay.
And it was after several hours of being like, it'll be okay, Kat. You can hold the baby. Because you don't want to like ruin it.
Right. That's right.
It's going to be so weird when the baby comes out of me and like lives in my apartment.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I don't know, like, I just can't imagine when it comes out and they give the baby to me in the hospital and I'm and they leave, I'll be like, I don't have a license for this. It's fucking weird.
Do you think you should need a license? Should the government license parents?
No, they couldn't do it anyway. There's like nobody, crackheads are always constantly having babies.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, what are you going to do
about
it?
Some of them work out pretty well, right?
They do.
Yeah, yeah. So kids
crackheads
are resilient.
Crackheads have very successful kids sometimes.
Yeah. What about the drag queens? How explain how drag queens saved your life.
Yeah, so I get into the nitty gritty in this chapter of a horrific abusive relationship that I was in my mid to late 20s, and it you know, I go into great detail about it. It was mentally abusive, emotionally abusive, at times it was physically abusive. And then the way that that relationship like that continues is the person has got mind control over you a little bit, or I think that this is all my fault. And I think no one would ever want me other than this person. And when this, you know, he became the be all end all. Horrible, horrible, horrible. When it finally ended for good, I remember going to a drag show with one of my friends, and there was a dance contest, and I won. Because I'm like so bad, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's the world's ugliest dog competition.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a worthwhile spectacle because of how ugly the dogs mm-hmm. are. That's kind of how I dance.
So it was a pity win.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it was more like what is her body doing?
Yeah.
You know? And I just looked at the drag queens just being so unapologetically themselves. I also mm-hmm. think drag queens are kind of the living, that helped me get through it. I would think back to that when I was going through these horrible times and I lost myself. I don't think that drag queens are a living embodiment of so many things I believe in. What I wrote about a lot in my first book of just like nothing is sacred
right.
and decorum is highly overrated and we should fly in the face of it. And self-expression being such an important form of at times protest, but oftentimes connection. I have been very pro and love drag queens for so many years, and I've talked about it openly on Fox, and it's never been a problem until it suddenly became a problem around 2022.
Yeah. What explains that? Because, you know, suddenly drag queens became a big, big deal.
Yeah, suddenly they did become a big deal. And I actually went back when I was doing research for my book, and I searched clips of myself when I talked about drag on Fox, and then I looked... I corresponded with my Twitter mentions at the same time. And for a while, it was nothing. Or people would be like, ha, 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 nothing. And then all of a sudden, it was, you should be fired. Why do you want to molest kids? Like, extreme. Like, I bet your husband is ashamed of you. Like, really extreme stuff. And it was around the time when there was the debate over schools and what should be teaching in schools. And then, of course, nothing can ever just stay on the thing. And then it became all of a sudden, now drag queens are a symbol of the left. And that's what happens with this binary thinking. It's you stop thinking, because once you pick a side, all the thinking's been done for you. You just go along with whatever their side's saying. And people have knee-jerk reactions to, oh, drag queen. Oh, that's a liberal thing. So that's bad. Drag queen equals groomer. That's bad. Just like how people on the left will hear, oh, Fox News, therefore she's bad.
Right.
It's people aren't actually thinking about these things. I mean, the drag ban in Tennessee, it's illegal for there to be a drag performance that could harm children anywhere a child could be. A child could be literally anywhere. You know, and I don't think of all the things I worry about for my child, even if I didn't love drag queens as much as I do, they're going to see a dude on with lipstick somewhere. Like, there's scarier shit out in the world than a man who looks fabulous.
You talk either in that chapter or a related one about how, okay, so you're pro drag queen and you don't think drag queens are groomers, and they're not turning kids gay or anything
Many
like
of
that.
Them don't give a shit about your kids either way.
But then you also talk, you know, in a way that seems sensible about like school laws where school districts will not tell parents if their kids are transitioning or they're being treated differently at school than the parents expect. And you say that's wrong.
Totally.
And while you're very pro-trans rights and even transitioning for certain people, like, why is that? I mean, that seems so obviously sensible. Mm-hmm. Why is that, you know, why aren't more people in that camp?
Because of the binary thinking, because of the two sides, because they think, oh, this is for trans kids. This is helping out trans kids. So if you don't support this, then you're transphobic. And what if the kid is being abused at home for being trans and so on and so forth? And what I talk about repeatedly in the book is if you feel really emotional about an issue or if an issue is really contentious, the best thing to do is to take that piece out of it for a second and then look at it. Because what you're saying here is that teachers should be not telling parents. They should be keeping secrets about kids from parents. that's crazy. That's saying that the state has greater ownership over your kids than you do. That's right. Like some truly creepy communist shit.
Right.
And just like there are already on the conservative side, there already are laws against indecent exposure in front of children. That's already hella illegal. Just like that's already like very, very illegal. You get in huge trouble for that. Same goes for child abuse, whether the child's being abused for being trans or not. So there already are laws for these things, but the government, it plays on our fears, whether it's the Patriot Act or it's stuff like this, it plays on our fears. And then it gets more power and control over us. And it gets us to think that we're good people for supporting it. And really we're giving up our own rights.
Hmm. Talk about how we get past this kind of binary thinking. And you talk at various places about, you know, starting with something, you know, a point of agreement between people. What are some of the strategies that you use either in your daily life or in your professional life that we might broaden out to, you know, kind of change the way we interact with each other?
Honestly, for me, I think a huge tool is vulnerability. It's something that I do throughout, not everything, that's how I live, but definitely throughout the book. I share a lot of deeply personal stories that I definitely... you know, haven't shared before. I do talk in detail about the abusive relationship. I talk about struggles I've had with mental health. I print a piece of my diary from when I was having a full on mental breakdown. I talk about religion. And in terms of how it has been difficult for me and my family sometimes, with my now dead mother, specifically our relationship, because she was very religious and I was not. So the complicated aspects of the relationship with my now dead mother. I talk about my sexuality. I talk about my sex life. I talk about my vagina. I talk about, you know, I talk about all these things because in the hopes that other people feel open to share things about themselves, because
or to also share things about your vagina.
Yeah, especially about my vagina. Yeah. But I really truly think that if we want to start to see each other as human again, we have to be willing to show each other that we are human. And I think that's really missing. And it's a strategy that I've taken before. I really try not to look at the Twitter stuff, but sometimes it's like kind of funny. And sometimes the Instagram comments are kind of funny. But what I've done recently, a few times, if I see something really hateful, I will privately DM the person because they always follow me. And I say, that hurt my feelings. 9 times out of 10, the person's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't want to. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you just called me an ugly bitch and told me to kill myself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how did you think that I would like that? Like, you know? Because they don't see you as a human being. And I think especially with social media, that's also a thing. And also, I think that's such a huge way, because so much of what, you know, as humans, we have so much in common. Just because you have a disagreement on a political issue doesn't mean that you've never been through a similar kind of breakup, or you might have a parent that's, you know, suffered from the same illness, or you might have gotten arrested for the same thing or whatever. You can have something you can talk about with that person.
Can, you know, part of it, and both in this book and the previous one, you also kind of talk about, you know, gaining more experience and growing. Vulnerability as part of it and maturation. You tell a pretty funny and a unflattering story when you met your husband, who is a veteran, who served in Afghanistan, and you say, like, your opening line to him was something like, oh, you served in a useless war.
Yes.
How did he respond to that? And did that kind of change the way that you, I mean, because that seems like both funny, but it is kind of like a defensive parry, right? Like you're negging him.
Yes, almost. Totally, because I didn't like... So my husband, I did not like him at all. So he's not my type. Like, I like to date, like, creative types, like, musicians, actors, especially, like, failed ones, losers, whatever. But creative losers was my type.
Okay.
And he was like a finance guy from a good job. He had a good job, like, from a good family.
Went
to West Point from Westchester. Went to boarding school. Conventionally attractive. Emotionally stable, which I really had become used to the kind of pizzazz that an untreated mental illness can bring to a relationship. So I didn't want to go out with him at all. But my sister was going through the dating app with me, and she was like, go, he's cute, go out with him. And I was like, ew, he played lacrosse, like, disgusting. But She convinced me to do it. So the first date, he shows up and I look at him and I'm like disgusted because he's wearing his finance douche uniform, right? He's come straight from work. He has loafers on. I start coming up with excuses for why I needed to leave immediately, but none of them were working. So I was like, oh, whatever, I'll just get drunk. So I had five tequila sodas. And he told me that he went to Afghanistan. I was like, oh, you fought in a bullshit war. And he was like, as somebody who was over there, I agree. And he also was immediate. So he was immediately kind of fascinated with me because no girl has ever told. Usually that people just say thank you for your service.
Right. Yeah.
He's never had anyone, let alone someone he's meeting on a first date for the first time, say that the war that he fought in was good for nothing. So he was intrigued by that. But I learned a lot because I write a whole chapter about weaving in how my own biases were wrong there twice, because at first I was kind of like, I don't know. I didn't know if I want to go on a second date with him or not. Cause I didn't really know he was fine, but I also gotten like, I kissed him and left, but I was also like so drunk. So, but then I went out on a second date with him after canceling two dates, and he showed up, he was dressed in like a hoodie. And he came late and he was unshaven. He had a hat.
Oh, and you're like, this is something I can work with.
I was like, oh, he's fucking hot.
Yeah.
And then I actually never spent a night apart from him other than that. But I also, my biases were wrong there. If I would not have given him a chance, I would not be so happy now and have this stable life and like baby and all this other stuff that like actual normal, like well-adjusted people do. But also I learned a lot about, you know, military. He kind of was saying, yeah, as someone who went over there, he was there at the tail end of when it was an actual combat mission. And he's like, I knew immediately being over there that what they were trying to say they were going to try to do was impossible. I mean, they wanted to create this sophisticated military force and teach them to use this equipment that required all this education across several different disciplines. But people here couldn't even read. I mean, it didn't make any sense to him to begin with. So I'm like, oh, you're a veteran, but you're very anti-war. Really, if I hadn't actually talked to him, I wouldn't have known that. You really can't assume things from people without taking a risk of being very wrong.
Can we talk about your libertarianism? Because on Fox, you are kind of the House Libertarian now, right?
Yeah.
And where did that start from? And how do you maintain that over time? Because a lot of libertarians have kind of wandered off into strange areas over the past 10 or 20 years.
They really have.
Yeah.
They really have. Yeah, I guess I've just always kind of been this way. And for me, I think that I think that there's a misconception too, where my view of something not being a problem that the government can solve doesn't mean that I don't think the thing is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of the time people who are for small government, people who are libertarian, get criticized as, oh, so you don't care if people starve, you don't care if people die, you don't, and it's like, come on. You know, I really think everybody cares about that except for like the rare true sociopath.
Right.
It's just more that I don't think the government's the best way to solve that. And look at how much that they control now. And they don't, I mean, living in New York, the amount that you pay in taxes is fucking insane. And what exactly do you get for it?
Mayor just lit a, you know, thousands of pounds of weed on fire.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
We're getting new trash buckets. So,
it's trash
going
buckets.
Somewhere.
Yeah. So I always just go back to, is the government the way to solve this?
No.
Let's look at what the numbers here say. Let's look at what else they've touched. And I can't, I'm never ending up at yes.
No.
So that's kind of where that comes from for me.
You're from Michigan, you grew up there, you went to Hillsdale College. You know, were your parents libertarian or individualistic?
My dad was. My parents were libertarian. My dad's like is more libertarian, I would say, than anyone. My mom was they're both definitely small government, but my mom was really religious, so she was conservative in that sense. But it was also really weird because if you ever were to spend time around her, you would never know that. She was extremely vulgar and crass.
Yeah, just like Jesus.
I am. Like we actually had the exact same personality with different beliefs. So we fought constantly.
Yeah.
And it would just get vicious. She told me on her deathbed, she said, you were my favorite sparring partner.
That's kind of beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah.
She also said, milk this as long as you can. I'm not kidding. Because she was a fucking force, I will say that.
You call yourself an agnostic, mm-hmm. not an atheist, yeah. And you were raised Catholic, but you're not a Catholic anymore. Mm-hmm. Does religion matter, or how does it matter to you?
I want to believe in something so bad, mm-hmm. you know? I want to think that I'm more than just this aging bag of bones and blood who's just aging more and more and more until one day I become completely decrepit and unfuckable. And then I'll turn
to dust. I'm seeing my life flash before yeah. my eyes.
But, and then I'll turn to dust, and it's where all I fucking am. Over, just like before I was born. I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't like the thought of that.
But
it's not a choice. That's the thing. And that's when sometimes religious people present it to me as like, mm-hmm. why don't you believe in God? And I'm like, you think I don't want to? No. You think that your way of my mom, who I miss, is watching over me? And I can actually talk to her if I want. And I'm going to see her again in heaven where nothing will ever be wrong again. And, you know, why would I not want to believe that if I could? I just can't get there. I hope someday I can have some kind of belief. I can't get there. I also don't know how I can get there. Because how am I supposed to have all the answers to the question of the universe? I can't even hold a baby.
Yeah. Speaking of babies and not getting there, let's talk about the election. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at Trump and Harris, you know, is one preferable, or do you go screaming for Chase Oliver, the Libertarian Party, or where do you come down on them?
You know, he doesn't follow me back.
That is really, that's kind of a, I think that's saying something.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of like, what the fuck, Chase?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's very busy. Yeah.
I'm very busy. I have 3 jobs and I'm growing a human. But honestly, I've never voted for either major party and I don't intend to this time either.
No.
I see it as if you are someone who is outright saying that I shouldn't have something that I think is a right, I'm not going to then vote for you to have power over me. For me, that feels like I'm being complicit in that. And also, I like to vote against the two-party system because I think it's responsible for a lot of the corruption that we have. Because whatever these politicians do, their own side's backing them up and defending it by just pointing out how what the other side did was so much worse. So it feels good for me to vote against it.
What do you worry most about a second Trump presidency?
I mean, just like going through it again. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just... I worry about, honestly, similar things regardless of who wins. I think that the past 2 elections, we've gotten to see how the other team handles it when they lose. And I haven't liked either result.
So can we give them each participation trophies and then just not have a president or something?
I mean, at this point, we don't have a president right now, do we?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Like, we don't, when's the last time anybody thought about him?
I'm struggling to remember his name.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He's just, like, on the beach, which is fine. Like, he should have been there for a while.
Right.
But we don't really have a president now.
Yeah. And I don't want to say things are good, but
they're not.
They're not falling off a cliff.
Yeah, they're not as bad as you think they would be if there was no president.
Is there something about Harris particularly that worries you?
I mean, obviously, I think that some of the ideas she's shared about economic policy are just totally horrifying and stupid.
Such as?
Price controls. It's almost as if that's not the way to make things cheaper.
Right.
Just as I have like a basic understanding of economics. So I would say that, but just in general, it's just, I've been so disgusted by, and this is, there's things that disgust me about every politician, so like, whatever. But with her specifically, and it's not just, it's actually not about her so much as the way the machine has just rallied around her, and she became the most popular icon it girl after she was kind of appointed the new nominee without ever even like talking to anyone first. It's so nauseating to me. Like, Kamala is Brat. It's like, isn't Brat like doing cocaine in the summertime? Like, isn't what that is? Like, she was a prosecutor. Like, she doesn't want you to do cocaine in the summertime. Like, she locked people up for weed.
Yeah.
you know, and it's just people creating these, the simping for politicians in general makes me sick. Cause when I see people see like when simps go, thank you. One person agrees. So when the simps go
I
off,
I think that was Chase
with,
Oliver.
Yeah. When they go off in my comments, like, oh, Cal, you're the most beautiful person in the world. Like, and some guy always comments like, hope she sees this, bro. I feel that way sometimes when I see people talking about politicians or fighting with their fam. Politics makes us fight with people who we actually know on behalf of people who don't even know we exist. That's simping and that's pathetic.
What is the one thing that we can take away from I Used to Like You Until, How Binary Thinking Divides Us, that we can implement immediately when we go out into the other room and finish the food and drinks?
That you should buy it.
Okay. Buy the book.
You That's should buy the book.
To save the country.
I will.
Yes.
I really do think that if everybody read this book, it could save the country. I really do.
Yeah.
I think to take away is just one single thing does not tell you everything you need to know about a person. And in this book, I call myself out repeatedly for times I've done that and what I would have lost if I didn't realize it soon enough. And I really think that approaching people with a sense of curiosity rather than a sense of judgment is huge. And also, you really should buy the book. I'm having a baby. It's going to be expensive.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Kat Timpf.
Thank you for having me.